Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to episode 306 of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, where we look at mysteries from the twin perspectives of faith and reason. In this episode, we're talking about after-death communications. I'm Dom Bettinelli, and joining me today is Jimmy Akin. Hey, Jimmy.
Howdy, Dom.
If you've ever lost a loved one, whether a parent, a spouse, a child, or even just a friend, you know the pain of separation. You can't just call them on the phone or arrange to visit with them. Wouldn't it be great if you could see their face, hear their voice, feel their touch, or smell their aroma again? Well, millions of people report just this. They report spontaneous experiences of contact with their departed loved ones. They even report spontaneously receiving messages from their loved ones. These experiences are known as after-death communications, or ADCs, and they are an increasing object of scientific study. So what are after-death communications? What are they like? And could they really be forms of contact with our lost loved ones? That's what we'll be talking about on this episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Jimmy, what do we need to say to begin?
Well, despite the reluctance of people in our culture to talk about them, after-death communications, or ADCs, are extremely common. Consequently, we're going to be taking a two-part look at them. Today, we're going to be looking at the types of ADCs that occur and giving you lots of examples. And then next week, we're going to be looking at what could explain them from the faith and reason perspectives. So this week, we present an overview of the data, and next week, we go into analysis mode. I should also say a word about the sources that we'll be using in this episode. One of the major sources is a book called Hello from Heaven by William and Judith Guggenheim. They're a pair of researchers who gathered a huge number of accounts of ADCs, and unless I say otherwise, the stories of ADCs that we'll be repeating come from that book. However, some will come from other sources. For example, I'll be quoting the Roman author Cicero with a couple of stories. And there's also a book called The Departed Among the Living by Icelandic researcher Erlendur Haraldsson, and we'll have a few stories from him as well. When it comes to statistics, our primary source will be a dissertation by a researcher named Jenny Straithorn, which she published in 2011 and that surveyed ADC research done down to that year. But our primary source of statistics will be an international study carried out by a team of researchers between 2018 and 2020. It was conducted online in English, French, and Spanish. It involved an online survey that got about 1,000 responses between the three languages, and we'll refer to it as the international study.
We often begin by noting when one of us has a personal connection to the mystery that we will be discussing. Do you have a personal connection to after-death communications?
Well, I potentially have more than one, and we'll be discussing my own lost loved ones at the end of next week's episode. But I wanted to begin by mentioning one of the first reports I personally heard of an after-death communication. I'd seen examples of ADCs in movies and TV shows, but this was an instance where I met someone in real life who was reporting one. The person in question was a member of a particular religious group. My wife, Renee, had been raised Catholic, but at some point when she was a child, her mother had joined a New Age UFO religion that was based in Southwest Missouri and Northwest Arkansas. Renee turned her back on this as an adult and went back to her Catholic faith, but other family members and friends were still part of it. And as I was getting to know Renee, this was before I was Catholic myself, the leader of the UFO religion died. And I remember that maybe a week later, one of the group members reported he had visited her, and she asked another member if he had been around to see her yet. At the time, I dismissed all this as imagination, but whatever one might think about the UFO religion, after-death communications themselves are very common, and in fact, they are much more common than people realize.
Let's start by getting our terms clear. What is meant by after-death communication?
It depends on who you're talking to. The term is becoming a standard one, though, but it's still used in different ways. When parapsychology began, or psychical research, as it was then called, members of the British Society for Psychical Research tended to refer to ADCs as hallucinations of the sane. A hallucination, of course, is something that you see or perceive when you're awake, so it's not a dream, but there's no external physical cause for the perception. Hallucinations are traditionally caused by things like mental illness or physical illnesses such as fevers. However, the point that the SPR researchers were making is that sane people sometimes have perceptions for which there's no physical cause, or hallucinations of the sane, like seeing your departed loved one when they're not physically there, because your loved one is manifesting in as an apparition rather than having a physical body. Even today, you still see the term hallucination used in this neutral way, sometimes in parapsychology, including for after-death communications research. But because of its associations with mental and physical illness, a lot of people prefer using a different term, and so they sought to find other things they could say instead of hallucination.
And what did they come up with?
Well, in her 2011 dissertation offering a systematic review of the ADC research down to 2011, Straithorn surveyed a bunch of replacement terms that had been proposed. My favorite is idiophany, which, based on its etymology, would mean a manifestation of the unknown, or a manifestation of an unknown cause. Also, idionecrophony, which would mean a manifestation of the dead of an unknown cause. Another term was near-life experiences, which is an obvious variation on near-death experiences. However, none of these terms has really caught on, and after-death communications, or ADCs, seems to be becoming standard.
Isn't after-death communication rather broad? There are all kinds of different communications that one might have after death.
Well, that's true. For example, suppose you go into the hospital and suffer a cardiac arrest, so you die, but then they restart your heart. Technically, everything you say to anyone thereafter is going to be an after-death communication, since you clinically died and got revived. But most of us wouldn't call having a conversation after you get out of the hospital an after-death communication. So for our purposes, we're only going to be looking at situations where the person doing the communicating is still dead, and no resurrections either. Even then, there are lots of ways that communication is supposed to happen after death, and a lot of them are mediated by someone or something. They can be mediated by a person, if that person is a medium, or you could try to contact the dead with automatic writing or a Ouija board. There are also other techniques that have been developed as part of grief therapy, such as using an apparatus that's called a psychomantium, which we can talk about in a future episode. But those mediated experiences are typically considered different phenomena by after-death communication researchers. Instead, they're focused on spontaneous after-death communications, where the living recipients of the communication aren't trying to receive communication from the next world. It's just something that happens. And that brings us to a pretty standard definition of after-death communications. ADCs are commonly defined as spontaneous and direct forms of apparent contact with the deceased. They're spontaneous because no one is trying to make them happen, and they're direct because nothing is mediating them, like a human medium or a device of some kind. That, for our present purposes, that no device qualification is also going to include telephones, because so we're not going to be considering those today, because telephone calls with the deceased are reported, but they're going to be the subject of another episode. Finally, I'm not going to include one other category, and that's deathbed visions. A lot of people who are getting near death themselves report having communications with loved ones from the other side, such as seeing deceased relatives who come to help them with the transition and welcome them into the afterlife. However, we're going to be considering after-death communications with people who are still living their normal lives and aren't approaching death themselves. We're also not going to really be looking at apparitions of ghosts of the kind you would find in a haunted house. That's a different phenomenon than hearing from someone connected with you who is still deceased. And we'll be talking about all these other things in future episodes.
What about dreams of deceased loved ones? Will you be including those in after-death communications for our purposes today?
Whether to include dreams or insist on waking experiences is something that after-death communication researchers have taken different approaches on. Some have included dreams in their studies, while others have excluded them. But for our purposes today, we'll be including contacts made in dreams. In fact, we'll be mentioning experiences where the contact starts in a dream, but then the person wakes up and the contact continues while the person is awake. So for our purposes, an after-death communication will be considered an event that is spontaneous, so it's initiated by the dead rather than the living, direct, so it's not mediated by another person or device, personal, meaning it involves someone personally connected with you rather than a random ghost, and non-deathbed, meaning you're not nearing death yourself when you receive it. And that's the kind of after-death experience, or ADC, that we're going to be looking at, and it doesn't matter whether they involve dream states, waking states, or both.
Now that we've defined our terms, how long have people been reporting ADCs?
Basically all of human history, and even before. I have no doubt that people began experiencing these as soon as humans started dying, but we've definitely been having them all through recorded history. The two earliest writing systems that we know how to read are Babylonian cuneiform and Egyptian hieroglyphs, and both of them contain accounts of after-death communication. In fact, the British scholar Irving Finkel recently published a book based on Babylonian writings called The First Ghosts, which is very interesting, and I hope to have Dr. Finkel on the show to talk about it. However, here are a couple of ADCs that were recorded by the Roman author Cicero. He wrote these texts around 45 BC, and both of these ADCs occur in dreams. First, he writes,
"Who, pray, can make light of the following dreams, which are so often recounted by Stoic writers? The first one is about Simonides, who once saw the dead body of some unknown man lying exposed and buried it. Later, when he had it in mind to go on board a ship, he was warned in a vision by the person to whom he had given burial not to do so, and that if he did, he would perish in a shipwreck. Therefore, he turned back, and all the others who sailed were lost."
In this case, a man named Simonides buried the body of an unknown man, and burying the dead, is one of the corporal works of mercy and something that's been very important in many cultures. And then later, the man appeared to him in a dream and warned him that he would die in a shipwreck if he took a particular ship. So he avoided taking that ship and survived when the shipwreck happened, creating incidentally what's known as an intervention paradox, which is something we've mentioned before and we'll discuss more in future episodes on precognition. Now for the other dream.
The second dream is very well known and is to this effect. Two friends from Arcadia who were taking a journey together came to Megara, and one traveler put up at an inn and the second went to the home of a friend. After they had eaten supper and retired, the second traveler, in the dead of the night, dreamed that his companion was imploring him to come to his aid, as the innkeeper was planning to kill him. Greatly frightened at first by the dream, he rose, and later, regaining his composure, decided that there was nothing to worry about and went back to bed. When he had gone to sleep, the same person appeared to him and said, "Since you would not help me when I was alive, I beg that you will not allow my dead body to remain unburied. I have been killed by the innkeeper, who has thrown my body into a cart and covered it with dung. I pray to you to be at the city gate in the morning before the cart leaves the town." Thoroughly convinced by the second dream, he met the cart driver at the gate in the morning, and when he asked what he had in the cart, the driver fled in terror. The Arcadian then removed his friend's dead body from the cart, made complaint of the crime to the authorities, and the innkeeper was punished.
This is actually a pair of experiences that may reflect the historic human practice of biphasic sleep, where you sleep for part of the evening, then you wake up for a few hours, and then you go back to sleep for the rest of the evening. We talked about this historic human pattern in episode 98 on the mystery of sleep. Here, during what was sometimes called first sleep, the Arcadian friend who was staying in a local home had an initial dream imploring him for help because the innkeeper was planning to murder his friend. However, when he woke up, he didn't act on this. So during what was called second sleep, he had another dream, saying in essence, "Well, you didn't help me when you had the chance, so please at least make sure that my body gets properly buried." And he gave him enough of the details that were needed to find the body and convict the innkeeper. And so the murder case was solved.
Those are both pretty dramatic ADCs. They aren't all that way, though, are they?
No, most people don't have things this dramatic happen in their lives, but tons of people have ADCs. Exactly how many isn't clear. In her 2011 dissertation, based on her review of the literature, Jenny Strayhorn estimated that between 30 and 35% of people in America report having them at some point in their lives. On the other hand, she also estimated that between 80 and 85% of people who are grieving have at least one ADC during the first year of bereavement.
How can those both be true? How can 80 to 85% of grieving people report at least one, and yet only 30 to 35% of people overall have them?
One factor is that not everybody enters the grieving category. Some people are the ones who die first. You know, for example, in a marriage, either the husband or the wife is likely to die before the other, and parents tend to die before their children, though sometimes the reverse happens. So people sometimes die first and never go into the grieving process. However, there also seems to be another larger factor which Strayhorn discusses. It appears, at least according to her, that many people forget the ADCs that they've had, particularly if they weren't strong, dramatic ones. Some people may think that they've had contact with a lost loved one during the first year of bereavement, but if it wasn't a strong ADC, they may forget about it later. On the other hand, there are other estimates, and a booklet published by Evelyn L. Sacer and Associates in 2020 estimates that 40 to 50% of people have experienced one or more ADCs.
Are there differences in the kinds of people who have ADCs?
The research to date indicates that a broad swath of people have them. They can be members of any religion or no religion. They can be from any income or education level. And people of any age, from childhood to old age, can have them, though they may be somewhat more common among older people, which would make sense because older people have known more people who have died than younger people have known. However, there do appear to be differences across cultures. A 1969 study in Japan reported that 90% of people had had one during their lives. And a study here in America found differences among four ethnic backgrounds. African Americans reported the most ADCs, Mexican Americans the next most, then European Americans, and Japanese Americans the least, which is interesting since ADCs are so common in Japan. There also is a difference in that women tend to report them much more frequently than men, but many researchers believe that's a reporting artifact. In other words, men may have them just as often, they just don't talk about them as much, and so they don't report them to researchers. According to the L. Sacer booklet on the international study, literature suggests that men and women have ADCs at about the same rate. Women just report them more.
How easily do people talk about their ADCs? I can imagine that many people wouldn't share the fact that they've had one particularly freely.
That's definitely true. At least in recent history, people have been very reluctant to discuss the fact that they've had an ADC. One study done in 1985 found that 54% of the participants had never revealed the fact that they had had an ADC prior to being interviewed for the study. And there are understandable reasons for this. Following her review of the literature, Strayhorn wrote,
"The reason this research study is important is that the literature overwhelmingly points to ADCs being both common and beneficial. Yet many people have expressed hesitation and even fear regarding having the experience and or sharing it with others. In most of the ADC literature, the authors particularly noted percipients' reticence to disclose their ADC experiences, and some percipients' concern about their mental health because of not knowing about the ADC phenomenon. Much of the ADC literature arose from the field of paranormal psychology and or bereavement studies. The studies on ADCs related to bereavement generally arose from professionals' and researchers' surprise at observing the ADC phenomenon in the absence of any observed mental illness.
And that's really important to know. Having an after-death communication is not a sign of mental illness. It's a normal experience that a large percentage of the population has, particularly when they're in the active phase of grieving after someone has died.
Do people ever have more than one after-death communication?
Yes, the international study found that only about 10% of people reported having only one ADC, whereas 80% of those who had ADCs said they had more than one, and about another 10% weren't really sure. Furthermore, most of those who have had multiple ADCs are getting them from more than one person. Only about a third of ADC experiencers said that they only heard from one person, while basically 60% of ADC experiencers said they had communication from more than one departed loved one. Another 7% weren't sure if they'd had more than one, heard from more than one person.
Are there different types of after-death communications?
Yes, and how many there are will depend on the researchers that you're dealing with and the number of different categories that they use. However, a basic way of classifying them is between direct and non-direct communication. Non-direct communication involves perceiving something other than your departed loved one, such as another physical object or the motion of a physical object associated with your loved one. These objects serve as symbols that your loved one is trying to communicate with you, and so they might be what you could call symbolic ADCs. On the other hand, you might directly perceive your departed loved ones, and these perceptions could either be non-sensory or sensory. Non-sensory perceptions would be ones where you perceived that your loved one is present, but this doesn't engage any of your senses like sight, hearing, smell, taste, or touch. It's just a raw awareness that your loved one is here. On the other hand, the communication might involve one or more of the physical senses. You might see your departed loved one. You might hear their voice. You might smell an aroma connected with them. You might feel their touch. And you might have more than one of your senses involved. But one way or another, you have a sensory experience of your departed loved one. So these would be sensory rather than non-sensory ADCs.
Then let's go through the different categories of after-death communications, beginning with those that are symbolic, then those that are non-sensory, and then those that involve different physical senses. What do people report in a symbolic experience?
According to the Guggenheims,
many people reported receiving a sign which affirmed that their deceased family member or friend had survived physical death and continues to live in another dimension of existence. We call these symbolic ADCs or ADC signs. They are a relatively common type of after-death communication. Some people are sent a sign spontaneously as a gift, while others ask or pray to receive one. Depending on their belief system, they may ask their deceased loved one to give them a sign, or they may pray to God or the universe for one. Typical symbolic ADCs include butterflies, rainbows, flowers, many different species of birds and other animals, and any number of inanimate objects. Whether a sign comes immediately or takes days or weeks to arrive, most people intuitively recognize their sign right away and feel it was intended just for them.
One of the reasons that butterflies are a common sign in these experiences is that they are a symbol of change and survival, because caterpillars go into chrysalises and then emerge as beautiful butterflies, which makes them a natural symbol of survival beyond death. And for example, you'll find butterflies used as symbols in hospices by grief counselors and in bereavement groups. Here's an account of a butterfly-related ADC from a woman named Caroline, whose 24-year-old daughter was killed by a drunk driver while she was riding a bicycle.
After my daughter's Catholic funeral service, we went out to the cemetery. While Father was saying the final prayers, the big white butterfly landed on Lindsay's white casket and stayed there the whole time. When the service was over, Sister Therese hugged me and said, "Oh, Caroline, did you see the white butterfly too? A butterfly is a symbol for the resurrection. I never knew that meaning before." and this put me at peace.
And here's another experience from a former New York police officer named Al. His daughter, Diana, had died in an automobile accident 10 months earlier at the age of 17.
On the 4th of July, we were up at our summer home in Pennsylvania. I was there with my wife and her aunt, her uncle, and her cousin. We were sitting out on the lounge chairs, and I was having a cigar. This butterfly just happened to be flying around. I looked at it and right away thought of my daughter, Diana. I thought, if it's you, Diana, come down and tell me. And it did. Immediately, the butterfly landed on my finger. It walked up and down on my finger, then onto my hand, back and forth. I could even see its little feelers moving. Couldn't believe it. My wife sort of looked at me. I think she knew what I was thinking. I finished my cigar and got up. The butterfly stayed right on my hand. I walked all the way to the house, went to the kitchen sink, and drank a glass of water. The butterfly was still with me. Couldn't believe this. I said, well, I gotta go take a shower. You gotta go outside. I opened the door and went out on the deck. I sort of pushed the butterfly with my finger and it flew off. I watched it fly away down the yard. It was just unbelievable. Never had a butterfly landed on me before. Then I went in to take a shower and cried. I really didn't know that the butterfly had any significance to the Compassionate Friends Bereavement Society until I went to their annual conference a few days later. During the opening ceremony, I realized, oh my God, their symbol is the butterfly.
Now, what Al reports is pretty unusual behavior for a butterfly, which is why I've included his story. Having a butterfly land on a casket, as in our first story, could just be a coincidence. But butterflies don't usually land on your hand and stay there for as long as Al reported while doing all the stuff that he did. So that's more significant. However, not all symbolic ADCs involve butterflies. For example, here's a story from a woman named Lucy, whose 9-year-old son Steve had also died in a car accident.
The night before the 1-month anniversary of Steven's death, I was carrying on in his room saying, give mommy a sign, give mommy a sign. The next day, I was in his room again. I had gotten Steven a kitten 3 weeks before he was killed, and the kitten was on his desk. But I didn't want anything touched on his desk because I wanted to leave Steven's room exactly the way he had left it. Then the kitten knocked over a painted bottle that Steven had decorated. I quickly shooed the cat off the desk and picked up the bottle with my index finger in the neck. I felt some paper inside, so I pulled it out and opened it up. Steven had written in marking pen, I love you, Mom. I was so happy that I had gotten my sign. It made me feel so ecstatic that I was laughing and crying at the same time.
And this would be an extremely meaningful experience for any grieving parent. Steven had written this note for his mom, not knowing when he was going to die. And then after his tragic accident, the kitten she had gotten for him revealed its location to his mother. Yes, you could chalk this up to just coincidence, but it's what the psychiatrist Carl Jung would refer to as a synchronicity, an apparent coincidence that is very meaningful for the experiencer. Here's another symbolic ADC that is related by a woman named Sunny. It's actually a series of events that began 3 weeks after her 9-year-old son, Sean, died at an accident at his school.
I was crying one day and talking to Sean, begging him to please send me a sign that he was still with us. After sitting for a little while, I had a feeling to get up and go into his room. I just wanted to open a drawer and touch his clothes, so hopefully I would feel a little bit better. But I felt compelled to pull the drawer all the way out and look underneath it, and there was a dime. And then it hit me, this is a message from you, Sean. This is you coming through. When I saw that dime, I thought back to a little joke that we had between us. I used to give Sean a $2 a week allowance if he kept his room clean and did what he was told. As I gave him the $2, I would say, this is for being a good son. And then Sean would go to the little frozen juice can he had decorated where he used to put all of his change, and he would get a dime and give it to me saying, this is for you, Mom. This is your allowance for being a good mother. So when I saw that dime, I felt really good because I realized this was Sean's message to me. I had never found a dime in my life before. As it happened, I started finding a lot of times after that, mostly at work. Then I started finding them on special days, on Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. I would find dimes when I really needed them, at a restaurant, in a parking lot, in front of a pet store, walking our dogs in the evening, in a hospital when my husband had surgery, at a museum, in a pizza restaurant, and getting off a train. One day I even found two dimes. My family wanted to know that Sean was with them too, so I asked him to please give them a sign. And soon they also started finding dimes.
And according to the Guggenheims, over the next 9 years, Sunny and her husband found a total of 640 dimes, which would be a total of 71 dimes a year, or six dimes a month, or three dimes per person per month for 9 years, which is rather a lot. I don't think I've ever found three dimes in a month, especially not for a period of 9 years, and I doubt that I would even if I were actively looking for them. So this, like all ADCs, you know, involved cases of synchronicity or coincidences that are meaningful to the experiencers. I have no reason to challenge the experiencers' interpretation of these events. They regard them as symbolic communications from their departed loved ones that are very meaningful to them, and I have no reason to challenge that. However, because they do involve coincidences, they will be less convincing to skeptics, and so I consider symbolic ADCs to be one of the lesser forms from a perspective of providing evidence to the unconvinced, since they can be dismissed as just coincidence. Although the more unlikely the coincidence would be to be due to random chance, the more evidence they actually do provide.
Then let's turn to the next category of ADCs you mentioned. These were ones where a person thought that they perceived their loved one, but their perception didn't involve any sensory impressions, no images, sounds, and so forth. What are these experiences like?
They're known as sentient ADCs. In Latin, sentire means to feel. So a sentient ADC is one where you feel the person's presence. According to the Guggenheims,
people reported having an intuitive awareness or inner knowing that their deceased loved one was with them in the same room or area. It was a distinct, almost physical sensation that he or she was nearby. The presence felt familiar and conveyed the identity and personality of the one who had died. Many people state they can sense the emotions and overall mood of their deceased loved one while they're having a sentient ADC. And some may receive nonverbal messages this way. Though sensing someone's presence is the least tangible and most subtle form of ADC contact, each experience has a definite beginning and ending. The experiencers are aware when their deceased relatives and friends arrive and when they depart.
The international survey found that basically a third of experiencers, 34%, had sentient-only ADCs, where they sensed the presence of a loved one, but they didn't have other sensory impressions. Of those who had sentient-only experiences, basically two-thirds, 68%, said that they could tell where the person was in space relative to them. So they could sense, for example, he's over there or she's behind me or something like that. Another basically two-thirds or 65% said they could tell when the person arrived and when they left. 61% said that this felt different than just thinking about the deceased person or having them in your heart. And three-quarters, 75%, thought that the loved one was trying to send them a message by their presence. Here is a typical experience of this type reported by a woman named Diane about 18 months after her grandmother died of cancer.
As I was standing at my kitchen sink, I felt this warmth, this presence. It wasn't physical, but more like a presence standing around me and folding me. I knew it was my grandmother. Nothing special was going on in my life at the time, and I hadn't been thinking about her. Bells didn't ring or anything. I just had a sense grandma was there with me. And then in less than a minute, it stopped. I remember feeling very cherished and loved. It was a really nice thing to have happen.
And here's another typical experience of this type from a man named Ken, whose friend Oscar had died of a stroke.
I always had a great deal of admiration for Oscar, although I never saw him very often. I really didn't spend a lot of time thinking about his death, just that he was gone and I was going to miss him because I couldn't talk to him and things like that. A couple of months after he died, I was walking down the hallway in my office as I did 1,000 times a day. All of a sudden, I felt Oscar. I wasn't in a reverie or even thinking about him. In fact, I was walking to the reception area to meet a client. I felt his presence. It was all around me. It was like I'd been immersed in a bubble of his energy. I got a sense of joy. It was like seeing Oscar again. But I just kept walking as I said something to him silently, and then he left.
It's possible that sentient ADCs may occur repeatedly for some people, which is true of ADCs in general. Sometimes they occur over a period of time. Here's a report from a woman named Susan, whose father-in-law had died of cancer.
It was very late at night, and I was sitting at the dining room table paying bills. I suddenly had the feeling I wasn't alone. I very strongly felt the presence of my father-in-law. At first, I felt surprised and kind of confused, but that went away quickly because he came with such peace and warmth. I was really excited that he was there. This happened about 3 times, always late at night. He seemed curious and concerned for our welfare, and I felt his visits were to check on us. Then he didn't come anymore. I felt his questions had been answered and that he was really happy once he realized the family was together and united.
ADCs in general, including sentient ones, can also occur at great distances from where the person died. Distance does not seem to be a barrier. Here's a report from a woman named Sandy. Her experience occurred about 5 years after her father died of cancer.
I was an operating room nurse in Vietnam. This happened 2 or 3 weeks after I arrived there in 1968. Shortly after I got into bed, the hospital was attacked by a barrage of rocket fire. The earth was shaking and the noise was deafening. I crawled under my bed onto the concrete floor. I was very cold, uncomfortable, and frightened. All of a sudden, my father was with me. I felt his presence and his emotional warmth. My father's caring and love enveloped me. I felt wrapped in the security of his strength and had an overwhelming sense of peace. He assured me that it was going to be all right. He was there several minutes, and then he left. This experience strengthened my spirituality and took away my fear of death. Throughout my tour, I dealt with a lot of young men who were severely wounded and others who went on to die. The war didn't stop. The casualties just kept coming. I sat with many who were dying because I couldn't imagine them dying alone in a foreign country. My experience with my father contributed to my ability to do that.
In this experience, despite the fact she didn't hear any voice, Sandy thought that the encounter with her father was meant to give her a message that she would be okay, despite the barrage of rocket fire being directed at the hospital where she was. Experiencers often believe that they've been given messages, and we'll have more to say about those as we go along, because the international study classified the messages into different types.
Sandy didn't hear a voice in her experience. But now let's turn to those where people did. What can you tell us about those experiences?
They're called auditory ADCs, and according to the Guggenheims,
receiving a verbal message by hearing the voice of a deceased family member or friend is also a very common type of after-death communication. We call these auditory ADCs. Some people reported hearing an audible voice that was from an external source. They heard the voice through their ears the same way they would hear any other person talking to them. But most people stated they heard a voice internally, inside their head or mind, and they were equally certain the voice originated from a source that was outside of them.
So the latter, where they hear the voice internally, would be telepathic experiences. The other types, where they perceive the voice coming through their ears, is also probably telepathic. It's just such a vivid experience that they perceive it as a more physical experience than a purely mental one. The Guggenheims also note,
generally, the messages that are received during auditory ADCs are brief and to the point. They may be compared to telegrams, which typically contain 25 words or less.
Of the respondents to the international survey, 44% reported hearing the loved one's voice, and of those that heard it, 48%, so basically half, said it came from outside them, as in a conversation between living people. 32% said that it came in the form of an external sound, where 57% said they perceived it as telepathic. 68% said that the loved one's voice sounded the same as when they were alive, and 87% said that the perceived communication was different from just a thought they were having, so it felt different than just thinking to themselves. Here's an account of an auditory ADC from a man named Philip after his 15-year-old daughter Tina died in an automobile accident.
Tina had friends all over the city. We didn't realize how involved she had been with so many kids. She was quite a force for good in the community. She had told one of her friends from Sunday school that if she should die, she would like everyone to have a party for her and not to mourn. Her friend reminded us of this statement. So, the night of Tina's funeral, we had a very large gathering at our home with 200 to 300 kids, some with their parents. It was wall-to-wall people. I was passing through the hallway downstairs when I heard Tina say, "I love you, Daddy." I wheeled around because this was an audible external voice. I am a board-certified psychiatrist, and I'm not given to hearing things that are not there. Having lived my professional career as a pretty hard-headed scientific person, I really hadn't expected this. However, this experience took a good bit of the sting out of the loss because you know you really haven't lost them.
So Philip perceived his daughter's voice as an external one that he heard through his ears. However, here's an account of an internally heard voice from a woman named Carla, whose 5-year-old daughter Amy had died of a brain tumor 18 months earlier.
"I usually stop at my daughter's grave as I drive by. It was Valentine's Day, and I was feeling a little badly because I hadn't brought anything to put on Amy's grave. So I decided I wouldn't stop. I just tried to put it out of my mind and go on home. But as I passed by, I was aware of this very strong voice. Although it wasn't audible externally, I was definitely able to hear it. Amy said, 'Don't worry, Mom. I'm not there. I'm fine. I'm with Grandpa and the other people who have died before me. My daughter didn't want me to feel guilty because of trivial things like placing flowers on graves. She let me know it was okay and that I didn't need to worry about her. This experience brought me a lot of peace.'"
Sometimes the person who has died has a message of regret concerning things in their life, such as in this account from a woman named Peggy, whose grandmother had died of old age.
"My grandmother insisted on living with her sister, and they were both in their 90s. When they couldn't take care of themselves anymore, my mother moved them into her house. Mother did everything in the world for them, but those last 6 months of my grandmother's life were full of complaints. Nothing suited her, not her food, not her clothes, nothing. My mother was getting exhausted and just couldn't take care of my grandmother any longer. So she very reluctantly put her in a nursing home where she died about a month later. My grandmother came to me the day after she died. I was sitting in my living room when suddenly I was surrounded by her whole presence like a pink cloud of love. It was so beautiful. She said telepathically, 'I want you to tell your mother how much I really appreciate everything she did for me. I want her to know how grateful I was, even though I wasn't able to express it while I was alive. I want you to tell her that.' Grandma was so lovely. This was a totally different personality from the one we had known, the old lady with the aches and pains that nothing would please. This was a completely different side of my grandmother once she was out of her body. So I gave my mother the message, just the way my grandmother told me. And she got real teary-eyed."
Despite the brevity of most audible ADCs, there are some where an experiencer is able to have a two-way conversation with their departed loved one. Here's an experience from a woman named Beth, whose father, Norman, had died of congestive heart failure.
"The night my father died, I was lying in bed, and lo and behold, I sensed his presence. He said, 'Hi, honey.' I said, 'Daddy, you're okay.' He said, Honey, there's nothing to it. Dying is as easy as falling off a log. I was so overcome that I really didn't know what to say. My father continued, I just stood up and there was Carl. He shook my hand and said, hello, Norman. It's good to see you. Carl and I used to play together when we were little kids, but I hadn't seen him in years. All these other people were there who I hadn't seen in ages, and Carl introduced me around. I was lying there crying with joy and said, oh, that's wonderful. Then my father said, I just wanted you to know, don't worry about me. I said, thank you, Daddy. It was all telepathic, and that was the end of it. I fell asleep very, very happy. I wanted to share all this with my family, but I knew they would think I was crazy. So I just used it as support and let it warm me inside.
And that's not uncommon. Very often, people who have ADCs keep them to themselves because they don't want others thinking that they're crazy. And so there's kind of a vicious cycle here. If people knew how common ADCs are, then people wouldn't think that those who have them are crazy. They might or might not believe that the ADCs were actual communications with the departed, but they would recognize that you're not crazy for having one. So the silence about them tends to feed the impression that something's wrong with having them, which is one of the ideas that ADC researchers are trying to dispel so that people will feel more comfortable talking about the ones they've had.
Let's talk about another kind of ADC that involves the senses. What can you tell us about after-death communications that involve the sense of touch?
These are sometimes called tactile ADCs, and according to the Guggenheims,
these experiences were usually felt as a light tap, a gentle touch, a soft caress, a tender kiss, a comforting arm around the shoulder, or an all-embracing hug. Each one was a loving way to express emotional support and reassurance. Regardless of the form, the experiencers easily recognized their deceased loved ones by their familiar and distinctive touch.
Of the international survey respondents, 48%, or basically half, said that the loved one took the initiative by touching them. Of those, 55% said that the contact was familiar or typical for the loved one. 80% said that the touch was transmitting some sort of message. And 26%, so basically a quarter, said that they also tried to touch the deceased loved one. And of those, 43%, nearly half, said that they were able to grasp the loved one and felt resistance or matter or something when they did, which is a very interesting finding. They didn't just perceive their hand going through the loved one. They felt like they were touching something physical. Here's an example of a tactile ADC from a woman named Joyce, whose daughter was almost 4 years old when she died following open heart surgery.
Several weeks after Megan's funeral, I was really upset one night. I went to bed early. I was just lying there, crying. All of a sudden, I felt a little hand gently touching my cheek. I thought, oh my God, that's Megan. Her little fingers felt soft and smooth on my face. A tremendous sense of peace and calmness came over me. I felt Megan was telling me she was all right.
And here's another simple experience from a man named Mike, whose 15-year-old daughter Laura had been killed in a car accident.
2 days after my daughter was killed, I laid out on the couch in the family room and fell asleep. About 10 or 15 minutes later, I was awakened by Laura's kiss. I knew she was there. She kissed me on my lips. I felt her kiss me. I knew without a doubt in my mind that my daughter was giving me a kiss to assure me she was okay. Everything Laura needed to say was in that kiss. It was real comforting to me. I felt such joy. It was absolutely the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me.
Now, these two experiences both involved very simple touches. Joyce just felt her daughter's hand on her face. Mike felt her daughter's kiss. But here's an experience from a woman named Kathy that is more complex. Her daughter, Teresa, who was 15, had died in an automobile accident.
Throughout the ensuing months, my heart ached, my body ached. I didn't know how to go on. One day, I lay on my bed facing the wall. I was just wishing to die. And suddenly, I felt Teresa sitting behind me on the edge of the bed. She began stroking my forehead and hair, just as I had so often done for her. I could definitely feel her presence sitting there. I could feel her energies. This lasted a minute or so, and then she gradually went away. I was totally joyful to have this contact, and it actually kept me going.
So here, the tactile impression was more complex. It wasn't just a single touch or a kiss. Instead, Kathy felt her daughter stroking her forehead and hair for about a minute. And tactile impressions that go on for that long would be less likely to be just due to a momentary subconscious manifestation. Now, here's an even more dramatic tactile experience. The report comes from a woman named Sarah, and she and her husband, Doug, had just lost their 24-year-old son, Andrew, in a motorcycle accident.
I was standing in our kitchen before Andrew's memorial service. Kyle, our other son, came over and put his arm around me. Then my husband, Doug, came over to us, and we opened into a three-way hug. As we stood there, silently, with tears rolling down, we felt a light pressure, a light caress on our shoulders. In my heart, I knew it was Andrew, and Doug and Kyle did too. We all felt the warmth of his embrace and his love, and mentally, I heard Andrew say, "Hey guys, it's okay." This lasted no more than 30 seconds, and then the warmth and the pressure were gone, but Andrew's hug had made us a complete family one last time.
One of the important things about this experience is that all three living family members felt the hug. Sarah, Doug, and Kyle all felt Andrew joining their family hug. So this is an ADC with multiple witnesses, and that does sometimes happen. Also, this experience involved more than one sense, because in addition to feeling Andrew's embrace, Sarah also mentally heard his voice. And having ADCs that involve more than one sense is quite common, especially for the two most important human senses, hearing, which we've already heard some examples of, and sight, the sense that humans rely most upon.
Before we get to sight, there are two other senses we need to cover, taste and smell. Are there ADCs involving those?
Taste and smell are related senses in that they both involve detecting chemicals. Taste involves detecting chemicals that are put on our tongues, and smell involves detecting chemicals that are floating through the air. So they're both chemical senses. The two senses are tightly related, and a lot of our experience of taste is actually based on the smells of the food that we're eating. People who have lost their sense of smell, as could happen, for example, with COVID, then report that they can't taste things nearly as well. But despite this close correlation between the two senses, I'm not aware of any that involve taste. They may happen, like maybe out of the blue, someone suddenly starts tasting the signature dish that their mom used to serve them. But if that happens, it doesn't show up statistically, at least it hasn't so far. And an article on the International Survey by Marjorie Wallacott and others has a footnote saying that the international survey that had like 1,000 responses did not turn up any that involved taste. On the other hand, there are a bunch of after-death communications that involve the sense of smell. The Guggenheim state:
the accounts in this chapter involve smelling a fragrance that is associated with a specific deceased family member or friend. They are a relatively common type of after-death communication, and we call these olfactory ADCs. Typical scents include the fragrance of a perfume, cologne, or aftershave lotion, the essence of roses or other flowers, and the aroma of a food, beverage, tobacco, or commercial product. The variety of odors that can be identified is virtually unlimited. During an olfactory ADC experience, people reported smelling a fragrance that was clearly out of context with their surroundings. The room or area they were in was suddenly filled with a particular aroma, but it had no physical source. Occasionally, two or more people who are together in the same place at the same time can smell this scent. In fact, an olfactory ADC is the one type of after-death communication that is most often shared by a group of people. Anyone may have an olfactory experience by itself, or it could be combined with a sentient, auditory, or tactile ADC.
Of the respondents to the international survey, 28% said that a fragrance characteristic of the deceased made them think that the loved one was present. That would appear to include experiences that were purely olfactory, where the fragrance was the only sensory element to the experience. But it would also include experiences where the fragrance was just the first thing they noticed, and they may have gone on to see or even hear the loved one. But there could also be other experiences that included a fragrance. It just wasn't what alerted the experiencer to the loved one's presence. 60% said that the loved one was trying to convey a message by the fragrance. The Woollacott paper also gave its own examples of what kinds of fragrances people reported.
The fragrances typically included aftershave lotion, a typical body scent, perfume, or soap, but many odors were noted in the descriptions, including tobacco, food, and flowers. Here are some examples of what different respondents shared. The odor of the pipe of my father. The odor of his hair. His perfume. The perfume of his shampoo. The perfume and aroma of crepes, his favorite dish. For Papa, it was the smell of brioche and coffee. Tobacco. The smell of roses. The smell of my sons after returning home from work.
Here's an example of an olfactory ADC from a woman named Brenda, whose husband Russell died at age 42 from a heart attack.
Russell and I had always said whoever went first would find a way to communicate back to the other one, and he did. 3 or 4 weeks after Russell died, I was sitting at my desk at work. I suddenly had this fantastic aroma of roses. It was as strong as if there was a bouquet of roses on my desk right under my nose. I knew it was from Russell. I looked around the office and there were no roses anywhere. Nobody else smelled them, only me. The aroma stayed for quite a while and I felt a total profound peace. Russell used to delight in sending a bouquet of roses to me at work for my birthday, anniversary, or sometimes just because I intuitively knew he had sent them again as his way of communicating his love for me.
So this was a subjective olfactory experience. Brenda verified that there had been no roses in the office and nobody else smelled them, but she did. So this experience was a subjective one that was just for her, and she associated roses with her departed husband, Russell. Roses are a common scent, but here's a more uniquely personal one. This account comes from a woman named Hazel, whose father had died 12 years earlier of a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 57.
My 23-year-old nephew, Brett, died suddenly of a heart attack. He was a dedicated young man in pre-med who had been married just 11 days. It was a very hard thing for me to accept, and I was very resentful and bitter toward God. 3 weeks later, I was out working in my garden, planting flowers on a Saturday afternoon. All of a sudden, I could smell the tobacco from my father's pipe. It was a special blend made for him at a tobacco shop. It had a very sweet, spicy aroma. My father said, "You've been terribly unhappy and I've come to set something straight. Don't worry about Brett. He's here with us. He's happy and he's well. Don't concern yourself. Let it go." It was just like somebody had poured warm sunshine on me. I had this absolutely peaceful feeling and I could let go.
So here, the scent was very personal to Hazel's father. It was a specialty blend of pipe tobacco that the tobacconist made just for him. And yes, that's something that pipe shops often do. In fact, somewhat to my surprise, listeners have taken an interest in what kind of pipe tobacco I smoke. And I've shared that the main one is a specialty blend that's made for me at a pipe shop called Ash and Ember in Siloam Springs, Arkansas. The blend is called St. Michael's Holiday, and after they started making it for me, they started offering it to other people as well, and it's becoming rather popular. Since I've mentioned it on the show, they've also started getting orders from it from Mysterious World listeners, so if you're interested in trying it, you can call Ash and Ember in Siloam Springs, Arkansas, and ask for St. Michael's Holiday, and they can mail it to you. In addition to the unique scent associated with her father, Hazel also got a verbal communication in which he said that her nephew, who had just died, Brett, was with him and other family members in the afterlife, and that he was happy and well, so she didn't need to be worried or bitter about his death. Hazel felt this message was like having warm sunshine poured over her, and she was able to let go of the resentment she felt towards God.
All right, so we're going to look at visual after-death communications next, but first, I'd like to take a moment now to thank our patrons who make this show possible, including Ramses, Greg W., Arlia S., David R., and Tori. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World and all the shows at StarQuest, and you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is also brought to you by DeliverContacts.com, offering top brand contact lenses at always low prices with free delivery. Visit DeliverContacts.com. And by Rosary Army, featuring award-winning Catholic podcasts, rosary resources, videos, and the School of Mary online community, prayer, and learning platform. Learn how to make them, pray them, and give them away while growing in your faith at RosaryArmy.com and SchoolofMary.com. Jimmy, now let's go for the most important human sense, sight. What can you tell us about ADCs involving visual impressions?
Well, they take quite a variety of different forms. Sometimes they involve a visual impression that is so strong that the person perceives it as coming through their eyes. In fact, they may think that they are physically seeing their loved one and may not be aware that anything strange is happening until the person suddenly vanishes, which may in fact be what lets them know for the first time that the person is dead. However, sometimes there's something off about what they see. The loved one may not look fully solid. They may still think that they're seeing the person through their physical eyes, but they only see the upper part of the person's body, or the person looks transparent or misty, or the person is surrounded by light. Or sometimes the person just looks like a shape that is made out of light, such as a sphere of light. The light is often perceived as very intense, yet it doesn't hurt the eyes of the experiencer. And sometimes the experiencer recognizes that they aren't seeing the person with their physical eyes and that they're seeing the person with their mind's eye, so it's a mental image. How the person appears to them is also interesting. Sometimes they see the person just as they were when they died, but often they see the person as younger and in full health. Or if the person who died was a child, they may appear older in a more mature form. Sometimes they see the person in clothing that they wore during life, especially if the clothing was important to them or to the experiencer. And sometimes they appear in unfamiliar clothing, especially a heavenly robe or gown. All of this fits with what is reported in paranormal field investigations of apparitions, in which the deceased can appear to the living in any way they choose. Older, younger, dressed one way, dressed another way, as a ball of light, or whatever else.
Let's try to put some numbers on those types of experiences to the extent we can. We've been using the International Survey for Statistics. What did they find with visual experiences?
Well, 46%, or almost half, of respondents said that they saw the deceased, so these were very common. And 60% of those people said that their eyes were open at the time, so it wasn't in a dream or with their eyes closed. 60% also said that they saw the person's entire body, while 25% said that they saw only the upper part of the person's body. 1% only saw the lower part, so 1% of people see ghost legs, and another 12% indicated that they saw something else of the person's body. It wasn't either the top or the bottom. 24%, or a quarter, said that the feet were visible. About 74%, or three quarters, said that the person was in the center of their vision, not in their peripheral vision. 62% said that the loved one was close enough to touch them, and a third, or 33%, said they were several meters away, and then 3% said that they were farther away than that, they were in the distance. 62% said that the loved one seemed solid, like a living human being. 12% said the person was transparent, so that you could see objects behind them. 11% said the person was a foggy silhouette. And 15% said other, which may include light phenomena. Only 17% said that the person looked the same as they did at the hour of death, with 55% saying they looked different, presumably meaning they looked like they were in good health compared to how they looked at the hour of death. 76%, or three quarters, said that the loved one was immediately familiar to them. For example, wearing their favorite clothes and behaving in a familiar way. When it comes to age, 51%, or half, said that the loved one was the same age at when death occurred, but 32%, or a third, said the loved one looked younger, and 1% said that they were older. This presumably applied to infants or children who had died but appeared more mature in the ADC. 35% said that the loved one seemed brighter than their environment, such as having light surrounding or emanating from them. But 54%, so more than half, said that wasn't the case. They weren't brighter. They didn't have light coming from them. As to how the visual experience began, 28%, so, you know, three in 10, said that the loved one materialized right in front of their eyes. 60% said the loved one was already there when they looked, and 12% weren't sure. During the visual experience, 19% said the loved one was completely motionless. 29% said that they weren't completely motionless, but were quite static. 30% said they moved around the environment, and 16% said they were quite animated, you know, such as gesticulating. When it comes to how the visual experience ended, 15% said the loved one faded away gradually. 28%, or, you know, basically 3 in 10, said they dissolved instantly. 18% said they weren't there anymore when the experience blinked. 11% weren't sure how the experience ended, and 28% said it was something else. I assume that would include accounts I've read where the loved one exits by walking through a door without opening it, or walking through a wall, or ascending into the ceiling or something. Now, let's look at some actual examples of visual ADCs. Here's an experience that involved the loved one appearing just as an intense light. The experiencer was a woman named Edna, whose mother had died of cancer at the age of 66.
2 or 3 hours after my mother died, I wanted to be by myself. I went to the garden and I suddenly saw an intense bright light. It was about 4 feet off the ground and 3 or 4 feet in diameter. The light didn't have any specific shape, but I knew it was Mother. She said, "Hello, Edna. I love you. I'm all right and you'll be fine. It's beautiful where I am now and I'm blissful. I'm home." I told her, "I'm so happy for you." And she said, "Take care of your daddy." My father also had terminal cancer at that point. I said, "Daddy doesn't belong here anymore. He belongs in that wonderful place with you. In fact, I don't want to be here anymore either. I want to be where you are in that extraordinary bliss." Mother said, "It's not your time. Your task is not yet complete. Stay and live each moment to the fullest. Enjoy the gift of living on this beautiful earth. Let love flow through you, because love is the most important thing there is." Then Mother said, "I'll be with you always." And at that point, she just faded away. It was the most incredible experience I've ever had.
ADC experiencers also report their loved ones being free of the limitations they had during this life. For example, here's a visual ADC from a teacher named Phyllis, who had worked with a 9-year-old boy who had had Down syndrome, where people are born with an extra chromosome, usually chromosome 21.
"I had been taking care of Joshua in his home during the summer while I was going to school. He was severely retarded and physically handicapped. Then he went off to a school for handicapped children, and about 9 months after that, he died in his sleep unexpectedly. 3 days later, I was in my bedroom, and I suddenly became aware of a very bright blue and gold light of tremendous brilliance. There are no words in our language to describe these colors. A sense of the magnitude and beauty of this being was impressed on me as this light. It became very clear that this was Joshua, and that he wished to send a message to his mother. His message was simply that he was very happy and free. Now he could laugh, now he could dance, and now he could sing. When Joshua was sure I had received the message in a telepathic way, he was gone."
So Joshua now seemed to have mental clarity, where in life. The teacher indicated that he had severe mental handicaps and could not sing, you know, suggesting that he was nonverbal. Now, here's an account from a man named Gordon, who had a friend of the family named Mrs. Tinsley, who died at age 93.
I went into the viewing room at the funeral home to pay my last respects to Mrs. Tinsley. I was the only person there. As I was standing looking at her body, I heard, "Gordon, it's okay if you cry." I looked around because it was Granny Tinsley's voice. When I looked up, she was on the other side of the room, maybe 10 feet away. It was like she was really there. I could see all of her. Her hands were slightly lifted, and she had on a different dress than she was wearing in the casket. Suddenly, I had this explosive sob. It was really wrenching. I was really hurting, but I didn't know it. I looked away and cried, and when I looked again, she wasn't there anymore. I don't think I would have cried if she hadn't said something. I knew I missed her, but I would have just kept it bottled up inside. Since then, I've remembered on occasion that it's okay to cry, because Mrs. Tinsley gave me permission.
So here Gordon saw all of Mrs. Tinsley from head to foot. He said it was like she was really there, looking like she was physically solid. And he also heard her voice as if it was external, coming from a particular location in space, which is what caused him to turn around and see her. Here's an account from a woman named Hannah, and this occurred about 6 weeks after her 82-year-old mother died of a stroke.
I couldn't sleep one night, and so I got up and did a couple of chores around the house. Then I sat in the chair in the front room. I was thinking about Mother and feeling the loss of no longer taking care of her. Suddenly, I saw her walk into the room. The first thing I noticed was that she was walking normally. 10 years before the end of her life, she was forced to have both legs amputated above the knee. Mother had both her legs again, and she walked right over to me and sat on the arm of the overstuffed chair. She put her arm across my shoulder and said, "Hannah, darling, you've been like an angel to me. Don't feel sad. Don't grieve for me." There was a radiance about her, and she looked so happy. Then Mother got up and walked around to the other side of the chair. She said, "Don't worry about me. Just remember, I'm happy." Then she kissed me on the cheek and left. It was so very real. I felt the touch of Mother's arm on my shoulder and the press of her lips on my cheek. I felt the special love and closeness that had always existed between us. This was a very loving and special occasion for me and something I've kept sacred.
Here we have a multi-sensory experience involving sight, hearing, and touch. And it was apparently fully realistic, as if Hannah were experiencing it through her physical senses. And once again, the loved one was not hampered by limitations they had in this life, and Hannah's mother had both of her legs back, which had been amputated above the knee a decade before. One of the things that sometimes happens with visual ADCs is that the experiencer doesn't see their loved one here on Earth, but in a different environment. Instead, it's as if they get a glimpse of where their loved one is in the afterlife, as in this experience by Edie, whose 14-year-old stepson Michael was riding his bicycle when he was killed by a hit-and-run driver.
We arrived for the viewing at the funeral home and stood in front of Michael's casket. I quietly said a prayer. All of a sudden, with my eyes wide open, I saw what was like a film strip in front of me, just slightly above my eye level. I saw a pretty green rolling field with flowers, birds, and butterflies. It was very brightly lit, and the colors were clear and vivid. I saw Michael skipping and running along. He stopped and looked at me and had a beautiful smile. His eyes were sparkling, and his face had the happiest grin. He was healthy, he was joyful, and he was not in pain. He was surrounded by love and didn't have any anger or bitterness. Michael said, "I'm okay. Don't worry about me." With his body language, he said, "Don't feel sad about this. That's not me you're looking at in the casket. I am here." I blinked, and he was still standing there. And then the vision just faded away. When I looked at his body in the casket again, I realized it was just the empty temple, the place where he had lived for a while, and he was no longer there. As I turned away, I felt a lightness in my step, like a burden had been lifted off my shoulders. I knew Michael was fine. There was absolutely no question about it. Initially, this experience cut short some of my bereavement. My pain left, but not my grief. Not the missing of my stepson as a person.
And here's another similar experience of seeing the loved one in an afterlife environment. It's reported by a woman named Gay, whose 5-month-old nephew Luke died of cystic fibrosis, which is a lung condition.
My sister was very distraught when her baby died. She had gone through such a rough time watching Luke suffer and blaming herself. She kept repeating, "I wonder if he's upset about everything he went through. I wonder if he knew I was always there with him." Later, as I was putting on my makeup before going to the funeral home, I heard a little voice calling me, "Aunt Gay! Aunt Gay!" My eyes were wide open as I turned, and I saw a vision right in front of me of Luke in a heavenly environment. He was sitting on a woman's lap. I couldn't see her face, but in my heart I felt it was Mary, the Blessed Mother. She was wearing a long white robe that came down to her feet, and her small feminine hand was around his bottom to hold him steady. Luke was dressed in a little blue baby suit with a collar and buttons down the front. His hair was combed. Everything was in place, and he looked perfectly healthy. His face was radiant, and he was smiling. He was just a baby, but he spoke with an intelligence that amazed me. He said, "I want you to tell my mother that I knew she was there. I knew she did the best she could for me. Tell her I'm fine and that I love her." Then he said, "You have to tell my mother today because it will be the only way she can get through the funeral tomorrow. She will believe you." He made me promise and I said I would. After this vision was over, I doubted myself. I told my best friend and she said, "I believe that it happened. You have to tell your sister because you promised Luke you would." So I went to the funeral home and told my sister of my experience with Luke and Mary. And she believed me right away. It was exactly what she needed to hear. She now knew that Luke was happy and wasn't sick anymore. She knew her baby was in heaven and she had a little bit of peace.
This is another experience where the loved one did not have the limitations they had in this life because baby Luke was only 5 months old, but he thought and spoke like he was much older in the ADC. In this experience, the Virgin Mary appeared, but Jesus also shows up in ADCs. For example, here's one reported by a woman named Wendy, whose 19-year-old son Dean had been killed in a motorcycle accident.
Dean had been a sophomore at Harvard when he was killed. This was 3 years later, and it would have been his graduation day. I went out of my office to have a cigarette. I was sitting in a chair in a room by myself and closed my eyes. All of a sudden, I saw a picture of my son with a man who appeared to be Jesus. It was an internal vision, and the picture was so clear, it was almost as if they were right in front of me. Dean had on a black graduation cap and gown, and Jesus was wearing a white robe and had long hair and a beard. They were both smiling, and Jesus seemed pleased. Dean was very happy, and I figured he was in heaven. The vision lasted no more than a minute, just that brief time to let me know that everything was all right. Now I know where my son is, and I'm very happy for him.
People can also express religious concerns for the living when they appear in an ADC. Here's an experience reported by a woman named Louise after a young family friend named Ryan had drowned.
I went to bed and Ryan appeared to me. I was sort of in between awake and asleep, but my eyes were open. I saw him standing at the foot of my bed. He looked very healthy and very strong. He was very, very calm and had a real peaceful look on his face. He said, "Louise, I want you to do something for me. I want you to tell my mother to have an altar call at my funeral. I've got lost loved ones that I want to be saved." When I sat up in bed, Ryan disappeared. An altar call is when they play soft music and the preacher asks if there is anyone who has not been saved and given their life to the Lord. He then asks them to please come to the altar and pray and turn their life over to God. I was real hesitant to tell Ryan's mother because I knew his family didn't attend church regularly, so I didn't know how she would handle it. But then the next morning, I told her what had happened. She said she believed her son came to me, and if that's what he wanted, then that's what she would do. So there was an altar call at Ryan's funeral, and his brother Eddie was saved. This made quite a change in Eddie's life because he had been kind of wild, and now he's a policeman.
Some of the experiences we've been hearing about occurred either while a person was asleep or when they're falling asleep, as with Louise's experience of Ryan, could these have been just ordinary dreams rather than anything paranormal?
In principle, yes. And next episode, I'll talk about that more. But for now, I'll note that there are differences between sleep state ADCs and regular dreams that involve deceased loved ones. The Guggenheim's report.
There are many significant differences between an ordinary dream and a sleep state ADC. A dream is generally fragmented, jumbled, filled with symbolism, and incomplete in various ways. Though some are very intense emotionally, they typically have a quality of unreality about them and are often soon forgotten. In contrast, sleep state ADCs feel like actual face-to-face visits with deceased loved ones. They are much more orderly, colorful, vivid, and memorable than most dreams. In fact, some may be ADC visions that occurred during sleep. They are basically very similar to ADCs that take place while people are wide awake or in the twilight state. Of course, many sleep state experiences that include a deceased family member or friend are not ADCs. Most are just regular dreams based upon memories and other emotional material from the subconscious mind. For the bereaved, these dreams are a normal and beneficial part of their grief process. Those who have dreamed about their deceased loved ones and also had sleep state ADCs with them say they can easily distinguish between these two different kinds of experiences.
One of the things that is often reported about psychic experiences in dreams is how vivid they are. Experiencers often say that what happens was so vivid it felt realer than real. So between that and the fact that sleep state ADCs are much more purposeful and less chaotic than normal dreams, there is a basis for distinguishing them from normal dreams. According to the International Survey, 62% of respondents indicated that they had ADCs in sleep, which would be a majority of them. And it would mean that something like 38% were purely waking ones. Another altered state of consciousness besides sleep that sometimes blends with ADCs are what are known as out-of-body experiences or OBEs. We'll talk about OBEs in general in a future episode, but there are cases where after-death communications appear to take place in the context of an OBE. For example, here's one from a man named Ron, whose sister had died of complications at the hospital at the age of 53.
Prior to my bedding down for the night, I was in a prone position and was resting in a semi-meditational state. Suddenly, I felt the presence of my sister, Bobby. She flew down to my being and grabbed my right hand. I could feel her touch. She was real. Bobby was wearing a white gown made of a light, flowing gossamer material. She was much younger and physically in perfect condition. My sister was the happiest I'd ever seen her, smiling and laughing the entire time. She had real bright, sparkly eyes and was very content. Bobby said to me telepathically, "Let's go and have some fun, Ron." And I said, "Okay." So my sister and I suddenly burst out into space. It was quite an exhilarating experience. I could see stars and planets and all kinds of stellar constellations going by. Everything was very vivid, very intense, and very bright. I didn't look back, although I felt a bright light surrounding and trailing behind us like a jet stream. As we went faster and faster, Bobby turned around and said, "Isn't this a wonderful experience?" I said, "Yes, let's do some more." We both laughed and continued our ascent straight up. I'm sure we were traveling at light speed or even faster. Then I began thinking, "Now hold it, where are you taking me? How far am I going? How am I going to get back to planet Earth?" Bobby felt my fear and resistance, and within moments I was back on Earth and in the same prone position on my bed. I was still tingling, and my whole being was totally energized. I opened my eyes and said, "Wow!"
In addition to out-of-body experiences, after-death communications also sometimes seem to blend in with near-death experiences, or NDEs. And that's not surprising, since the departed loved ones are in fact dead, and so contacting them might mean going through some of the same stages that are often reported in NDEs, like going through a tunnel and seeing a bright light and seeing a beautiful realm where people are happy. So you might have an after-death communication in the context of an out-of-body experience that shares some elements with a near-death experience. And ADC and an OBE and an NDE all rolled up together. We actually heard about such an experience back in episode 300 on Listeners' Mysterious Experiences. A listener named Mike reported that about 10 years ago, he had just gone to bed when he felt himself lifting out of his body. He moved through a dark space and then into an area of light where there was a tremendous feeling of love and belonging. There, he met indistinct figures that he believed were his long-deceased great aunts, who were surprised but happy to see him. Then he returned to his body and found his wife reading a book in bed beside him. Mike wasn't sure if he was actually asleep when this happened, but it did involve an out-of-body experience, and OBEs do frequently begin when a person is in a sleep state. In Mike's case, he appeared to encounter the souls of his deceased great aunts, so there's the ADC, and to get to them, he passed through a zone of darkness and then came into a place of light and love, just as commonly happens in NDEs. Well, listener Mike is not the only person that things like this have happened to. Here's an account from a woman named Betsy. She and her two sons, aged 6 and 4, were in a terrible car accident. Betsy survived, but her sons died. She reports,
"While I was in the hospital, I didn't want to live. Nothing made sense, and I just wanted to give up and die. I didn't want to live without my sons. An angel came to me and took me firmly by the hand. I felt a love I had never felt before. It took me to this beautiful meadow. It was the prettiest emerald green with the most vibrant, clear blue sky. The colors are hard to describe because they're not like the colors we see here. There was a bright white and lavender light around this meadow, but it didn't hurt my eyes. It was a very soothing, loving atmosphere. As the angel and I were hovering above the meadow, I heard a lot of laughter. I heard my sons, Nathan and Travis. I looked down to see what they were doing. My vision was really, really good. I could zoom in on them with my eyes. Nathan and Travis were with a bunch of other boys and girls. They were very vibrant and healthy, all happy and running and playing. There was so much beauty, so much love that it filled the air. The angel told me, 'Your sons are fine, and you will see them again. Do not worry.' As they went to reach out for Nathan and Travis, I was suddenly thrust back into my bed in the hospital, and that was the end of my experience. The angel knew I had to see that my boys were okay. I have never known a greater love than this."
That experience included the beautiful, happy realm that near-death experiencers often report. Now, here's an experience that includes not only that, but also the dark tunnel and the light beyond it. It comes from a woman named Dottie.
"In a dream, I went floating through the middle of a long, dark tunnel that seemed to go on endlessly. It appeared to be made of stone or dark brick. There was a very bright, warm, white light at the end of the tunnel with a hint of gold streaming out of it. Something kept pulling me forward. I had to go to that light. I felt a very loving presence, and I knew this light wouldn't hurt me. Then I merged into the light, like walking into fog. I was greeted by a lady who had both hands outstretched towards me. I felt she was Mary, the Blessed Mother. She never said who she was, but I knew her and I loved her. She took my hand very gently, and I could feel her warmth and her love. I was relieved and felt very peaceful being with her. She was wearing a white cloth robe so bright that it glowed. I knew she cared for me and loved me. The Blessed Mother was my guide to a beautiful garden with a clear, pure stream running through it. I touched the water and it was real. The grass and trees were bright green and there were flowers of all kinds. I was in a park-like setting and I could see big crystal buildings off in the distance. There was a bright light from somewhere and all the colors were very vivid. I saw my father, my stepfather, and my father-in-law all sitting on the bank of a river. They were waving to me and saying, 'Hi, Dottie.' They were fishing with rod and reel. They had all been fishermen in their life, but they had never known each other when they were alive here on Earth. It was a very relaxed atmosphere. I felt very happy, very peaceful, very restful. Once there, I didn't want to leave. Everybody was happy, and I didn't see anyone working. I met a friend who had died a long time ago, and she said, 'Don't worry, I'm really happy now.' And I saw my young cousin, too. The Blessed Mother said, "It's time to go," and she led me back to the tunnel entrance. I sensed she stayed until she knew I was through that light, but I don't remember coming back through the tunnel. I feel I've been entrusted with knowledge that most people don't have. I was always a very religious person, but I feel much closer to God now.
Many of the experiences you've reported involved messages of some kind for the living. Things like, "I love you," or "I'm okay, I'm happy, don't worry about me." But some have involved other things, like Peggy's grandmother, who wanted her to thank her mother for all she did for her while she was dying. Or Louise's friend Ryan, who wanted an altar call at his funeral to help his unchurched family members. Have there been any research on the type of messages people receive?
This was something that the international study done in English, French, and Spanish between 2018 and 2020 dealt with. In a booklet summarizing the study published by Evelyn L. Sacer, the researchers write,
"Regardless of the type of ADC, the very essence of these contacts is the message that is perceived. As experienced understand it, the very fact that the deceased seem to be able to communicate with the living implies that they seem to continue in existence elsewhere, whose nature exceeds our understanding. The strongest impact undoubtedly comes from this apparent capacity for making contact, a revelation for some, the confirmation of a pre-existing conviction for others, that a form of consciousness survives physical death. Each message is obviously unique because it is addressed to a particular person and shaped by a common past and a common history. However, we can schematize the contents because, in their essence, the perceived messages are relatively homogeneous."
The researchers then proposed four categories of messages, which they refer to as the four R's, which stand for reassuring, resolving, reaffirming, and releasing. They give examples of them as follows.
Reassuring. "I'm fine. Don't worry about me. The troubles I had at the end of life are now behind me." Resolving. Settling old conflicts, allowing space for apologies, providing closure. Reaffirming. Continuing bond, affectionate. "I love you. I will always be by your side. We'll meet again one day." Releasing. "Don't be sad. Pursue your life. Don't hold me back by your suffering."
So reassuring messages basically reassure the living that the deceased loved one is fine. Reaffirming messages are basically affirmations that they continue to love us and that we'll be together again. Those are definitely wonderful messages to receive. But to my mind, the two most interesting categories are resolving and releasing, with resolving messages devoted to resolving unfinished business, like settling old conflicts and making apologies, and with releasing messages not only telling people not to be sad and to pursue their lives, but also asking them not to hold the person back in the afterlife. That's something we'll talk about more in next week's episode when we deal with the faith perspective.
Then let's talk about unfinished business that may get dealt with in an ADC. What kinds of things get dealt with in resolving messages?
It obviously varies, but one bit of unfinished business can be, how did I die? We often hear accounts of apparitions who are confused after their deaths and aren't sure what happened. Here's one such account that was reported in the booklet on the international study. An experiencer reported,
"The most dramatic ADC was the evening a friend fell and was in the hospital when he appeared in front of my desk where I was working. I looked up and saw Charles. I spoke first and said, 'Charles?' He responded, 'Do you know what happened to me?' I explained that he had fallen and hurt his head and was in the hospital. Then I said, 'Charles, if you're here talking to me, you must have died.' He said, 'I just wanted to know what happened to me,' and he disappeared."
Much of the time, though, the loved one is providing information rather than asking for information, and it can take the form of a Jacob Marley-like, "don't make the mistake I did" type of experience, like the one Ebenezer Scrooge had. For example, here's an experience from a woman named Tanya, and it happened a year after her lifelong friend Gina had died in a car accident.
"I was on a layover at the Atlanta airport, en route to San Francisco. I was sitting in the airport lounge reading when I smelled white shoulders, the cologne that Gina had always worn. I looked up And there she was, sitting at the table with me. She looked relaxed and as pretty as she always did, the same as I had last seen her. She had on a red and charcoal gray plaid shirt that I had given her a few years back. I said, "Gina, what are you doing here?" She smiled and said, "I came to see you." When I looked down, her hand was on top of mine for a brief moment. Her hand was solid and very warm. I was a little choked for a few words, and she said, "Just relax. I want you to be happy, and I want you to stop worrying and feeling so badly about my death. I'm fine. I'm not going to visit you again, so I want you to make sure you get all your affairs in order." Then, in the blink of an eye, she was gone, and I sat there absolutely dumbfounded. When Gina died so suddenly, her affairs were in complete disarray. Maybe that was the lesson she wanted me to learn. Consequently, ever since, I've worked very hard to make sure my finances and my life are in order.
So this experience wasn't nearly as dramatic as having Jacob Marley show up clanking in chains and telling you you have to have a fundamental moral transformation or you'll end up like him. But Gina did tell Tanya to live in such a way that her affairs would be in order when she passed, so that this wouldn't be a burden to those she left behind, and thus not to make the mistake she had. Another kind of unfinished business that a person may have when they die can be created by the experience of the death itself. Now, in the booklet for the international study, the researchers at one point say,
"It should be stressed that the messages do not contain any information on the alleged new form of existence of the deceased, nor do they reveal anything about their new home. Only the state of mind of the deceased relative or friend is briefly described. I'm alive. I'm happy."
That is true of what the international study found, and it's true of the majority of after-death communications. They're really not meant to fill us in on the details of the afterlife, which is probably something we can't imagine anyway. And so they focus on what we really need to know, like our loved one is happy and okay. But even though the international study didn't turn them up, there are cases where the experience seems to give a bit more information about the afterlife. For example, if you were suddenly murdered and weren't expecting it, you know, that would come as rather a shock. So what happens to people in that situation in the afterlife? Well, here's an experience that has NDE elements from a woman named Pauline, whose husband Art had been murdered.
"I had a dream several months after my husband died. Art came and took my hand and we went through a tunnel. It was like going through a spiral, and there was a white light at the end. Art was perfectly healthy and was dressed as normal. He showed me a little two-room house he was staying in, and he said he was going to a halfway house to help him get over the shock of crossing over so suddenly when he was killed. He showed me what he was doing. He was working with flowers. I've never seen such beautiful flowers in my life. I can't begin to describe their colors. There were roses that were the size of dinner plates, and there were butterflies too. It was all so pretty. Then Art brought me back through the tunnel. When I woke up, I was crying. Tears were running down my face. My experience was really beautiful."
So Art reported that he was staying in a kind of halfway house to help him adjust to being in the afterlife after being suddenly murdered. It was depicted as a small two-room house that had a garden of amazing flowers, and Art was working with the flowers as part of some kind of therapy.
Do you think that's a literal description of what was happening to him?
No. The afterlife is a purely non-physical realm, so it doesn't literally have houses or gardens and flowers. My understanding would be that these are familiar images meant to help us understand something of what the experience is like for the deceased person, but it's not meant to be taken literally. I'd also note that this kind of imagery reminds me of the after-death communications reported by Father Nathan Castle in his Ministry to Souls. We talked about that back in episode 269 on Stuck Souls, and again in episode 270, where we looked at communication with the deceased. So if you want, you can go to mysterious.fm/269 and mysterious.fm/270 to hear about those. Father Castle reports having dreams from people who have died in violent ways, such as being murdered. And these individuals report a lot of very interesting and creative imagery to give him and his prayer partners a sense of what it's like for these souls. And they you know, what they relate to him involves processes like halfway houses in getting to the point where the souls are ready to move on to the next stage in the afterlife, like what Pauline reported about her husband Art after his murder. However, I don't think that our imaginations currently are capable of grasping the richness and complexity of the afterlife. So I think that this type of imagery, like that of the heavenly city in the Book of Revelation, is just meant to give us a non-literal taste of what a much larger reality is like.
I can imagine that sometimes people would have unfinished business from life due to the fact that they didn't treat the people around them well. Some people are just jerks in this life, and they have quite a bit they ought to apologize for. Do ADC experiencers ever report getting an apology?
They do. In fact, we've already heard one such case where Peggy's grandmother wanted to thank her mother for taking care of her while she was dying, even though at the time nothing seemed to please her. That's basically an apology for being unappreciative and kind of a jerk when someone was taking care of you in a difficult situation. But here's a full-on apology. The experience is that of a man named Kurt, whose father had died after a series of heart attacks.
I had always wondered, why does my father hate me? During my lifetime, he was not a loving man. He was very abusive in his physical corrections and discipline of his children. I had even seen times when he was abusive to my mother. On the third day after his death, he made an appearance to me. He was just as he looked before he made his transition, except I could see through him. His form was like a gray mist, but he was very easy to recognize, and I could see a bright white light shining behind him. My father was crying and asking for forgiveness. He told me that he was sorry for everything he had ever done to me, or to any of the family, or to anybody else. Now he realized that he had been wrong. We needed to understand that as a child, he had seen abuse and had been taught that way. My father also said that he did love me, that he always had, but wasn't able to show it because of his upbringing. Then he was gone. Right after he left, I cried because I felt like a large weight had been lifted from my shoulders.
So this was the kind of thing that Kurt really needed to hear, and it also helped shed light on why his father had acted the way he did. Some men, and this was particularly true of the generation that grew up during the Great Depression, have been taught not to be emotionally expressive. They need to be macho and can't easily say things like, I love you. And it's even worse if they themselves were abused as children, because that does tend to get passed down the generations until steps are taken to arrest it and stop the cycle. But one way or another, Kurt got the very sincere apology that he was owed, with his father crying and asking for forgiveness, which from a Catholic perspective would have been part of his purgatory. Now, here's another ADC that involved a full-on apology. This one came from a respondent to the International Survey.
On June 12, 2012, I was awakened around 6 a.m. in the morning. I saw someone walking on my front porch through my bedroom window. I thought, who would be here this early? I got dressed and went to the front door. I opened the door and saw a woman with her back to me on my left crying. I asked if she was okay. She turned around, and it was my grandmother from my father's side of the family. I was in shock to see her. She spoke and asked me for forgiveness and apologized for no longer talking to me after my father had passed away. I told her it was okay, and I forgave her. She walked towards me and we hugged. I felt her frail body hug me, and I hugged her back. I felt her clothes, her smell, and she thanked me as we hugged. I felt this most intense feeling of love. I started to cry. She then started to turn into this bright white light. I had to close my eyes due to it being so bright. I could see the light fading away through my eyelids. The feeling of her started to slowly leave. I opened my eyes and she was gone. I was standing there with my arms still looking like I was hugging someone. I was in shock. I went back into the house and laid on my bed, and my wife woke up. I told her what happened. My grandmother had been dead for about 7 years.
So that was another touching story of forgiveness and reconciliation through an ADC.
Back in episode 292 on disturbing near-death experiences, we talked about situations where people died and came back but had negative elements in their experiences. Some were even purgatorial or hellish. And you quoted from Raymond Moody's 1975 book, Life After Life, in which he had found a link between suicide and negative NDEs. Do negative experiences correlate with suicide in after-death communications?
That is something that the accounts of ADC show. It isn't that if you commit suicide, you automatically go to hell. However, there can be extenuating circumstances like mental illness or extreme physical agony. And as we heard in episode 292, the Catechism of the Catholic Church recognizes this. But suicide itself is objectively sinful, and it can have negative consequences in the afterlife, including if you kill yourself thinking that it would be a way out of mental suffering. Well, suicide doesn't fix you. So you'll still need to work through your mental issues in the afterlife. You can just take your trauma with you to the other side and have to deal with it there. For example, here's an experience from a woman named Faye, whose 16-year-old son Chris died unexpectedly from a heart ailment. But then
Chris's father took his own life right after Chris died, which was a double tragedy for all of us. I was beyond consoling. My experience occurred shortly after his father's death. It was right before morning, and I was somewhere between awake and asleep. I guess you could call it twilight sleep. Chris sat on my bed. He was very solid and very real. I could feel his presence and smell him. I could look in his eyes and see his smile. I could even see the little beauty mark under his eye and the little cleft in his chin. He looked peaceful, golden, beautiful. He appeared his exact age and in very good health. He said, "Mom, I wanted to come and tell you that I'm fine. I love you. Don't worry about me." He also said his dad was all right, but he was going to have to work through his problems. I just lay there for half an hour basking in the simple bliss that you sometimes have when you're a child. All I could think was, this is a gift. Chris really came, and I was elated.
So in this case, Chris, who died from an undetected heart problem, was fine, but he brought news that his dad, who had subsequently killed himself, would be okay, but had issues he needed to work through now. Indicating in Catholic terms that his father was now in purgatory and that he would have to deal with the problems, including those that led him to commit suicide. Here's another similar account from a woman named Wanda, whose husband Norm had died by suicide.
A year after my husband passed away, I had a very vivid dream. Norm was in a place with other people. It was not a very cheery place. It was kind of a dark, a little depressing. I remember being uncomfortable there, and I didn't have a very good feeling when I saw him. I approached him and asked, "Where are you? What are you doing here?" He told me he was in a holding place, that he had to be there until his life would have been over on Earth. After this happened, I felt a lot better because I knew Norm was okay. He wasn't happy and he wasn't sad, but at least he was in a safe place.
So basically, Norm was also in purgatory. He bailed out of life before his appointed time, and now he'd be experiencing purgatory until the point where he was scheduled to die. He needed to stay and deal with things on Earth, but he didn't do that, so suicide wasn't the way out that he hoped it would be.
History includes many cases of apparitions where the souls of the departed ask for the prayers of the living to help them get out of purgatory. Does that kind of thing happen in after-death communications?
It does, and here's an experience from a woman named Catherine, whose father-in-law had died of cancer.
I had this dream about 4 months after Pop passed away. His whole person was very clear, even though there was no light at all. There was pitch darkness about him, like if you cut out a picture and placed it on black construction paper. Pop was pacing back and forth in an agitated manner. He looked very distraught and very upset. He didn't even acknowledge my presence at first. He just walked with his hands behind him, looking down. Finally, I said, "What's the matter, Pop?" He turned and looked directly at my face with a dead-on stare. He said, "I don't like where I am. I don't like it at all. I did what I did because I had to. I had children to support, but I didn't mean for this to happen." I said, "There's nothing I can do for you." He said, "Oh, yes, there is. You can pray for me." I said, "All right, I'll pray for you." Then he said, "Tell everybody to pray for me." As he disappeared, he looked relieved and repeated, "Don't forget, tell everyone to pray for me." I woke up immediately and told my husband. I asked what Pop had done, that would cause him to have so much regret. My husband told me that when Pop was a young man and trying to support his children, he did some things that were illegal. I didn't know anything about that. When my husband told his brothers and sisters, they all prayed for their father, and I felt compelled to pray for him too.
Going to purgatory is one thing, because its purpose is to prepare you for heaven, but are there cases in ADCs that involve actual hell?
Most ADCs, like most near-death experiences, are positive in nature, but there are some, like the ones we've just heard, that are purgatorial. And it's rare, but I know of at least one case that can be read as involving actual hell. The rarity may be due to the fact that if you're in hell, you don't get to talk to your loved ones back on Earth. But in this experience, which is reported by a woman named Marlene, she saw what happened with her boyfriend, Wes, after he had impulsively committed suicide.
About a month later, Wes came to me in a dream that was totally vivid. But it wasn't just a dream. It was a real experience. He was surrounded by a fog in a desert wasteland. It was a lonely place. It was mostly dark and bleak. He was wearing a tattered t-shirt and shorts. Wes was despondent and resigned. He was definitely not at peace. He said, "I've been sentenced." I asked, "To what?" He said, "I've been sentenced to eternal life." Wes was a lost person, and I understood. He didn't find the peace he was looking for, and I felt immense sadness and pain. I told him I would pray for him. I woke up realizing it doesn't do any good to commit suicide because you're still going to be alive. You can't escape. It's not going to be any better after death. You have to live through this life and take responsibility for it. You are always responsible for your actions, whether you're here or there. If you abdicate your lessons by taking your own life, you can't expect that death is going to take away the pain or change the lessons you have to learn.
It's easy to see how a person who was hoping to end it all by committing suicide and who was looking forward to oblivion, not to having any more conscious experiences, could find it a hellish experience to be sentenced to eternal life, to continue having conscious experiences forever, but without the context of love. Eternity without love is what hell is, and I imagine that people who have turned their backs on love at the deepest level, which means rejecting God, who's love itself, will feel the way that Wes did when they die. Eternal life for them would feel like a prison sentence rather than a joy, because it's love that makes the difference. However, even in this case, we don't know that Wes was actually in hell. Perhaps he could learn the lessons he needed to and find his way back to love, and perhaps Marlene's prayers would eventually help him. But this experience is at least consistent with Wes being in hell.
We've covered after-death communications that were both positive and negative, at least for the loved one who has died. But are they ever negative for the living person who experiences them?
Well, if you're Marlene and your loved one is unhappy and tells you he's been sentenced to eternal life, that's kind of a mood killer. It's not the happy experience that most people have with ADCs, though it actually seemed to help Marlene by underscoring some important lessons for her. However, there are situations in which the ADC is so unexpected that the experiencer actually freaks out. For example, here's an account from a woman named Suzanne who was 18 years old and her 64-year-old grandmother had died of diabetes 10 months earlier.
I was getting married, and everyone was preparing the house for my wedding reception. I was really tired, and they suggested I run upstairs and lie down for a while. I was just lying there, staring into space and thinking about how I was going to miss my grandmother at my wedding. I had always counted on her being there, and she had said she would be. All of a sudden, over to my left, my grandmother's face and shoulders appeared. She looked as solid and as real as anybody. She smiled with a little glint in her eye and said, in a perky sort of way, "Don't you worry, honey. I'll be there." It was like a bolt out of the blue. Unfortunately, this startled me so badly I was terrified. I was scared out of my gourd. I screamed and started crying uncontrollably and ran out of the room and down the stairs. I was in a blind panic. My mother heard all this commotion and met me at the foot of the stairs, but I couldn't even talk. Later, when I told her about my experience, she just patted me on the arm and hugged me close, saying, "I think that's so sweet, dear."
And here's another experience from a woman named Charlotte, whose husband Glenn had died of cancer.
The night Glenn died, I needed to talk to someone, so I sat down in the living room and called my girlfriend Joni, who lived next door. As I was talking with her on the phone, I saw Glenn standing right in front of me, just inches away. He was as solid as a rock, and I couldn't see through him, but he didn't look the way that he did when he was sick. He looked absolutely healthy. Glenn leaned down and put his hand on my knee and said, "Charlotte, it's me. I'm okay. Everything's all right. I don't have any more pain. I feel great." Well, all I did was scream. He scared the daylights out of me. And the more I screamed, the more he said, "It's okay, Charlotte. It's okay. It's okay. You don't have to worry about me. I'm okay." That was it. And then Glenn just kind of evaporated. I sat there frozen in my chair, spellbound with disbelief. Joni wondered what on earth had happened. So she came over and we talked, and gradually I calmed down.
In both cases, the loved one was reaching out to be reassuring to their living relative. Susan's grandmother wanted to reassure her that she would indeed be at her wedding, and Glenn wanted to assure Charlotte that he was fine after his death by cancer. But both those intentions didn't guarantee how Suzanne and Charlotte would respond, and both of them were so surprised that they absolutely freaked out. Furthermore, in some cultures, people can have beliefs about ADCs that can even make them frightening. The Guggenheims report:
several people we interviewed had superstitious beliefs that ruined their ADCs. For instance, a few believed if they ever saw someone who was deceased, they or another family member would die very soon. And others automatically assumed that a loved one had come back to harm them in some way. Fortunately, the majority of people we interviewed who initially had a fearful ADC went on to have positive ones in the future, after they learned more about them and overcame their anxieties.
So that's good. It's good that after having a fearful ADC, they were able to then have positive communications from their loved ones later on.
Back in episode 186 on Animal Afterlife, we discussed arguments for and against whether at least some animals have an afterlife. And you noted that many near-death experiences involve seeing animals, including a person's own deceased pets, in the afterlife. Does something similar happen with after-death communications?
ADCs are mostly communications between a specific loved one and a living person, and they don't often end up communicating information about third parties. But sometimes the loved one does mention other departed loved ones and what's happening with them, and I am aware of an ADC that dealt with a former pet. According to a paper written about the international study by researcher Marjorie Willicott and others,
another ADC from a father-in-law also gave comforting information about a pet. The respondent said, "Yes, I believe that my father-in-law was trying to tell me that he was all right and that he had my dog, Maggie, safely with him and that she was all right."
So that would be an additional data point favoring animal afterlife. The Guggenheims also report:
many people have asked us whether deceased pets ever return to visit their masters. Yes, they do. We've heard several reports of ADCs involving beloved animals, including dogs, cats, a rabbit, and even a horse. We'll gladly devote an entire chapter in our next book to this subject if we receive enough valid accounts.
So that's encouraging news for pet owners.
For people who have ADCs, when do they tend to occur? Is there a time limit on them?
There's not a hard limit. Most occur within a year of the loved one's death, but they can occur years and even decades after the person has died. For example, here's an account from a woman named Shannon, whose grandfather had died 12 years earlier from a heart attack.
"My son Bradley was born prematurely. He had a lot of medical problems due to his early birth. The doctors were sure he wasn't going to make it. I was in the hospital chapel praying out loud to the Lord, 'I need help. I don't want my son to die.' But I felt my deceased grandfather's hand on my right shoulder and smelled his pipe tobacco. It was definitely like he was sitting next to me. Grandpa Mac had a special blend he made himself, which had a sweet hickory smell. I had never smelled it other than at his house. This gave me a calm, peaceful feeling, and I knew that my grandfather wasn't going to let anything happen to Bradley. After about 45 minutes, something told me to go upstairs to see my son. I said, 'Thank you, Grandpa,' and the smell of his tobacco disappeared. The doctor said, "We can't believe this. Your baby has made a complete turnaround. His vital signs are stable and his blood pressure is good." I just broke down and cried. I knew Grandpa Mac had protected him. Bradley had a miraculous recovery. Though he's hearing impaired, he is a very vivacious 5-year-old. He's very curious, very bright, and very articulate when he signs with his hands. He had never seen a picture of my grandfather. But when I showed him one a couple years ago, he immediately signed, "Grandpa Mac." I don't know how that kid knew, but he did.
So maybe Grandpa Mac had appeared to Bradley also. Now, here's an account that occurred 33 years after the loved one had died. It was reported by a woman named Marion, whose father had died of an aneurysm.
"I was in bed reading one evening. All of a sudden, I heard my father's voice say very urgently, 'Get out of that bed, get out of that bed.' I jumped right up and stood there quivering. I walked into the family room and sat down, wondering what was the matter. I hadn't been there 3 minutes when I heard a horrible cracking sound. My whole house shuddered and things were rattling in cupboards and falling off shelves. I went outside and saw that a heavy limb from my neighbor's tree had fallen on my roof. There had been no wind or storm. It was a fair night. Then I went back into the house and to my bedroom. There, I saw 3 enormous holes in the ceiling and a large branch projecting over my bed. The entire bed was covered with lumber and plaster and debris, just where I had been lying."
In this ADC, Marion's father made contact 33 years after he died to let her know that she urgently needed to get out of bed right before a heavy tree limb crashed into her room, her roof, punching holes in her ceiling and causing lumber and plaster to fall all over the bed. We'll have more to say next episode about ADCs that contain messages of warning, because this has to do with validating them.
In the ADCs that we've been looking at in this episode, you've been focusing on loved ones, but are there ADCs that occur with people you don't know?
There certainly are, but they're generally put into a different category: apparitions. If a dead person who you don't know is appearing to you or appearing in a particular location, we just call it a ghost and put it into the general category of apparitions. However, if it's a loved one or at least someone you know or is connected with you, then we put it into the category of after-death communications. That's what ADCs are: apparitions of people you know or that are connected with you after they've died. But there is a fringe to this category. This fringe occurs with people who you do have a connection to, but you never met, like family members who died before you were born. For example, in The Departed Among the Living, Erlander Haraldson reports the following ADC from a gentleman who never met his grandfather.
"I have never seen him. He died long before I was born. I was going to take the bus to Vogar in Reykjavik from my home in the same city. As I'm walking towards the bus stand, this deceased grandfather says to me, 'Do you have your pipe with you?' I searched in my pockets, found no pipe, and went back to get it. This is characteristic of how I remember him. Sometimes, after his death, I did not heed what he told me, but it was always right. Now I always heed what he says. I hear him with my inner hearing."
So this guy never met his grandfather because he died before he was born, but the grandfather still takes an interest in him and gives him helpful advice. Here's another account from Haraldson's study, where a young boy named Gusti saw someone he didn't know about at the time.
"I was 7 years old when I first saw a deceased person. It was in the countryside and everybody was in the main room. My father was reading to us, not religious texts, but stories. He read to the people in the evening, as was common in those days before we had radio. He needed a match to light his pipe. He was sitting in the doorway between the main room and my parents' bedroom, and further in was a room they called the lounge. That is where the matches were, on a table. He sent me in to fetch the matches. I was a little scared of the dark. This was during the winter. Everything was dark. And there was only one light in the main room over the book my father was reading. But a small light shone into the room from this light when the door was opened. I got my younger brother to come with me. I fetched the matchbox and we left the lounge. But in doing so, I looked at the bench that was situated along the wall with the door. A man was lying there with his hand supporting his head. When I came back to the main room, I did not dare run or make a noise, and I gave the matches to my father. A little later, he asked me, "My dear Gusty, what is wrong? Are you ill? You're so pale." I did not dare tell them what I had seen. 2 years later, I passed a winter in the countryside in Borgjarfjord. For Christmas, I was given something that had the size of a matchbox and could be used to examine photographic films. I used to enjoy it and to look at pictures. But one of the pictures was of that same man I had seen in the same position he had been lying in 2 years earlier. It gave me such a fright that I lost all longing to look at the pictures. My grandfather and his father had been brothers.
So Gusty had seen his grandfather's brother's son, or what we would call in English, his first cousin once removed. And thus, the man he saw did have a relationship with him. He had just never met the man during his life because of their age difference. So there can be ADCs involving people that are related to us or connected with us, but that we've never met before their deaths. They can still take an interest in their family members, you know, which eventually included us. And with that, we've pretty much covered a representative sampling of the kinds of ADCs that are reported. So next week, we'll go into analysis mode and see what we can figure out about them from the perspectives of faith and reason.
Anything else you want to say before we close?
Yes, I want to let people know that I'm going to be teaching the Introduction to Parapsychology course at the Ryan Education Center again this May and June. The Ryan asked me to teach their online Introduction to Parapsychology course last fall, and it was a big success. So the Ryan has asked me to teach the course again. It's an 8-week course that we'll be offering live in May and June, but you don't have to be at the lectures live because they'll be recorded, and you'll have at least 6 months to watch them at your leisure. You can either audit the course, which just means watching and listening to it just for your own information, or you can take it for a grade. And if you pass, you get a special certificate that's signed by me. It's really interesting as a course, and I hope you'll join me. It covers fascinating material that any fan of Mysterious World would love. Furthermore, the Ryan has also asked me to teach a course on Christianity and parapsychology this August, and a course on world religions and parapsychology this fall. So by taking Intro to Parapsychology now, you can be in a position to get the most out of the religion-themed courses I'll be teaching later in the year. Just go to Rhine, that's R-H-I-N-E, edu.org to learn more. Once again, it's R-H-I-N-E-E-D-U.org.
Jimmy, before we go, what further resources can we offer to the listeners?
Well, we'll have a link to the Ryan website where you can find information about the Intro to Parapsychology course. We'll also have a link to the Guggenheim's book, Hello from Heaven, Erlander Haraldson's book, The Departed Among the Living, the Guggenheim's website, afterdeath.com, also the After Death Communication Research Foundation, Jenny Straithorn's dissertation, A Systematic Review of Research on After-Death Communications, L. Sacer and others' booklet on After-Death Communications, L. Sacer and others' 2021 paper, The Phenomenology and Impact of Hallucinations Concerning the Deceased, as well as supplemental material to that, Woollacott and others' 2022 paper, Perceptual Phenomena Associated with Spontaneous Experiences of After-Death Communications, which is unfortunately behind a paywall, and Richard Kelly's paper, Postmortem Contact by Fatal Injury Victims with Emergency Service Workers at the Scenes of Their Death, something we'll talk about more next week.
All right, and now it's time to hear from you. What are your theories about after-death communications? Have you ever had one yourself? You can let us know by visiting sqpn.com or the Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World Facebook page, sending us an email to feedback@mysterious.fm, sending a tweet to @mys_world, visiting the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/discord, or calling our Mysterious feedback line at 619-738-4515. That's 619-738-4515.
And I want to say a special word of thanks to Oasis Studio 7 for the video and animation work they did on this episode. You can check out their work by going to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jimmy Akin. And while you're there, please help me out. I'm trying to grow my YouTube channel. You can help out by subscribing and hitting the bell notification so you always get notified whenever I have a new video. You can help by liking the video and by commenting on the video to tell the YouTube algorithm that you found the video engaging, and so it ought to show it to other people too. So you can help the channel grow in all of those ways, and I really appreciate it.
Jimmy, what's our next episode going to be about?
Next week, we're going to go into analysis mode and look at after-death communications from the perspectives of faith and reason. What does reason say about them? Do we have any evidence that they're more than just wishful thinking in the midst of grief, you know, after losing a loved one? And if we do have such evidence, what are the implications from the faith perspective?
And folks, be sure to follow Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at Jimmy's YouTube channel, where you should make sure to hit that bell to get notifications. You can find links to Jimmy's resources from our discussion on our show notes at mysterious.fm/306. And remember, to help us continue to produce the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is also brought to you by Tim Shevlin's Personal Fitness Training for Catholics, providing spiritual and physical wellness programs and daily accountability check-ins. Strengthen yourself to help further God's kingdom. Work out for the right reason with the right mindset. Learn more by visiting fitcatholics.com. And by The Grady Group, a Catholic company bringing financial clarity to their clients across the United States, using safe money options to produce reasonable rates of return for their clients. Learn more at gradygroupinc.com. And by Great Lakes Customs Law, helping importers and individuals with seizures, penalties, and compliance with U.S. customs matters throughout the United States. Visit GreatLakesCustomsLaw.com. Until next time, Jimmy Akin, thank you for exploring with us our mysterious world.
Thanks, Dom.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World on StarQuest. If you've enjoyed Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, you'll also enjoy another StarQuest Network show, Let's Science. Find it wherever you can find podcasts or at sqpn.com/science.